Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Photo Focus, described as America's largest photography biennial, is back with hundreds of artists, a record number of participating venues, and a wide array of lens-based art. Each project is centered around the theme of world record. The month-long celebration opens with an expanded week of programming from September 29th through October 8th. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss Photo Focus and some of the art in it are artist Michael Kopage. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
Co-curator of Free As They Want to Be and inaugural director of the Atlanta University Center Art History and Curatorial Studies Collective, Cheryl Finley, who is also a distinguished visiting professor of art history at Spelman College. Thanks for being here, Dr. Finley.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
And Photo Focus Biennial Director, Catherine Reichman Sigworth. Welcome, Catherine.
Thanks so much.
Photo Focus is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Catherine, I'd like to start with you. For folks who haven't attended Photo Focus, can you explain to us what Photo Focus is, how big it's going to be this year, and tell us a little bit more about this theme?
So Photo Focus was founded in 2010 with the idea that of celebrating photography and lens-based art in all of its forms and bridging communities together, both regional, local, as well as national and international. One of our largest programs is the Photo Focus Biennial. This happens every other year. And this year's theme, World Record, is really kind of a play on the idea of photography recording, serving as a record of life on Earth, but also how those records are then used to form memories and other concepts. Also fitting with this theme, this is a record number of participating venues and experiences this year. We have over 100 projects at 90 venues spanning from Dayton, Columbus, Greater Cincinnati, and Northern Kentucky.
Wow, it's really all over. What was the impetus for making it just so big this year?
Well, we have been growing each year. We have always had participants in Dayton, some in Columbus. That's a growing area for us. But it's really about recognizing that we have a larger reach. You know, Cincinnati is not a closed off space. These other places are only an hour and a half away. So it's just a way of really making this as accessible to the widest region possible.
Dr. Finley, I want to talk to you about this Free As They Want to Be exhibit at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. As I understand it, the exhibit is related to the legacy of slavery and the possibilities of freedom. Tell us more about that and the story behind it. And I guess I'm wondering if you could talk about this connection between the photography of the past and the importance of photography and video today.
Thank you for that rich, rich question. I'd like to begin just by saying that our exhibition and my co-curator is Dr. Deborah Willis, who's a photography and imaging professor at New York University and a distinguished artist and photo historian in her own right. But our exhibition was very much inspired by the focus that, pun intended, Photo Focus landed on for this edition, that is World Record. We think it's extremely timely. And that there are many recent events that have happened in the past 2 years. I think they're probably very obvious to your audience, the pandemic notwithstanding, the issue around questioning the role of monuments, and particularly monuments to the Civil War, and of course the racial violence and attempts to dismantle voting rights. These are some of the themes that that we were very intrigued by in selecting the artist and also working on the theme for our show. Now, you know, our title, the first part of the title, Free As They Want to Be, comes from a really important quotation by James Baldwin, the acclaimed author and theorist. And he said, quote, "Freedom is not something that anybody can be given. Freedom is something people take. And people are as free as they want to be." And so we worked on this exhibition with 20 artists. They work across multiple media, lens-based media, including, of course, black and white photography, color photography, video, silkscreen, projection, sculpture, and also mixed media installation. Much of their work is really trying to acknowledge how artists and creative people, writers and performance artists as well, are very much engaged in looking at the possibilities of freedom in their own work, and how they are related to their work. The work that they create is related to an ongoing investigation of the possibility of freedom. And so if we go back to looking at the 19th century, one of the artists that we're so excited to have in the show is James Presley Ball. Of course, he's probably known to many of your listeners. He operated a studio, a daguerreotype studio in the 19th century that was not only popular in Cincinnati, but also he was an artist who was popular across the United States and even had an international following and recognition. He photographed people like Frederick Douglass and was an abolitionist himself. So that's one of the closest 19th century and connections to this, the idea of freedom, and also an idea of freedom, of course, that takes enslaved Africans out of chattel slavery. And we look at the geography, and Catherine, I thank you for laying the landscape of Cincinnati and looking across the Ohio River to Kentucky, and thinking about other neighboring cities, to think about how Cincinnati was such a nexus for enslaved Africans who were on the route to freedom. Of course, our exhibition is opening on the 30th at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. And I think that's another poignant connection. But other artists who are in the show also look at not just the figure of Frederick Douglass per se, but also other notions of how memory as an aesthetic tool has been employed not only by visual artists, but also by those people who engage in writing themselves into freedom. Many of the artists also rely upon the archive and return to the archive, find artistic inspiration and fodder within the archive itself. So if you look at the image of Frederick Douglass by Bisa Butler, who's best known for her work using quilting, but quilting that takes often as an inspiration images that come from photographic history. And she's inspired by an image, a very strong and forward, three-quarter profile image of Frederick Douglass in the work that she creates and is installed in our exhibition. Other artists too, like Terry Adkins, as another example. He was a multidisciplinary artist, but who later in his career began to do X-ray photography. It's really, really fascinating, especially when you think about the role of memory. And he, for many, many years, collected memory jugs. And these are, water jugs that are embellished with different kinds of objects, that we see outwardly, but also some of them we don't actually have the ability to see. And so he had this great idea to do X-ray photography of these memory jugs, and created large format black and white photographs where you can kind of see the kinds of objects that we might imagine enslaved Africans and or people, living in freedom would have collected to remember their loved ones by. Mm. So I'll pause here. I know I've spoken for a bit here.
Yeah, it sounds like a fascinating exhibit. Michael, I was fortunate enough to tour your exhibit at the Weston Gallery at the Aronoff Center with you very recently. It was a fascinating tour, and you had wonderful things to say. You said your work exists to be confrontational in a way that turns the key to unlock what you're suppressing. Talk to me more about that, especially as it relates to the black box, white box artwork that you have. And maybe you could start by explaining that artwork a little bit and then talking about what you mean by unlocking that
Sure. Black Box is a project that grounds Black men and women in their humanity. People who come into the work are prompted by the color Black. It precedes a noun that it in turn makes negative. And it's about how we're enculturated to learn about Black aside from race, separate from race, and how that has real world implications with people who identify and are categorized as Black. White Box is that same thing because, you know, white as a category and as defined is perfect, is flawless, is perfection. And there are many outliers, you know, in that group who don't live up to the definition. And so it's about kind of unpacking how we define the categories and the implications they have on our lived experience. That key that I mentioned that I turn is there are a lot of things that I feel like in our country currently that we are avoiding. You know, we refuse to confront, you know, historically and contemporarily. And I think that, you know, if you subscribe to, you know, therapy, you know, you have to confront something, you work through that thing in order to move past it. And we are having an extremely difficult time as a country doing that in a number of spaces. So my work is meant to be a key that's turned, that unlocks that suppressed idea, thought, memory, experience, whatever that is for you, the individual, and it's meant for you to project your own bias and prejudice on top of it. And then the healing starts. You know, I don't know where that goes for each person, but I always like to be on hand to kind of unpack it and facilitate it. I'm using a dialectical behavioral therapeutic model, which is evidence-based. Before I nerd out, I'll probably just stop there.
No, I love it when you nerd out. So this Black Box, White Box, for people who haven't seen it, these are photographs of Black men, and you're about eye level with the men. They're wearing Black t-shirts that have words on them, like Black Cat, Black Cloud, words, as you said, that have Black followed by a noun. And then White Box, in this exhibit, these white people in similar t-shirts, but with things like white privilege, white supremacy, tower over the Black men. And these people are police officers who
yes.
have killed Black people.
Yes.
And one of them is Ray Tensing, who people, our listeners will remember for his role in the killing of Sam DuBose mm-hmm. here locally. Talk to us about that scale. Why, in your vision, do you have these white figures towering over the Black men?
I mean, the easy definition is that we're kind of Black characters navigating through a white environment. And this environment, regardless of if it's a legal environment or a corporate environment or whatever, educational environment, sometimes are extremely hostile to Black people in terms of how we're perceived, in terms of how we're projected onto, in terms of our overall experience. And I don't know that there's a safe space or a safe place oftentimes to really unpack that, except when we're in our own collective kind of box and space. And so, you know, the piece is just kind of laid out plainly so that I can, you know, instead of avoid it and wait till I get into a safe space, just say, hey, you know, these things happen, these things are happening, and I don't want to carry the weight of this for my entire life. So I kind of create these pieces so that they can live separate from me, outside of me, and other people can kind of help me carry that baggage because it's not solely my responsibility. And I think that for a long time, we've kind of been conditioned to carry the weight of it alone, but that's over.
Yeah. Catherine, how important are themes of social justice, artwork that relates to social justice, and these these things that we're having to confront as a society. You know, during the pandemic, we saw the murder of George Floyd. We had all these different awful things that happened, Ahmaud Arbery, all these awful, awful things that created this communal trauma for so many people. How important was it for Photo Focus this time around to really reflect that and include art that addressed those themes?
Well, Photo Focus always tries to choose themes that are broad-reaching and timely. And this allows people like the Weston Gallery, who presented Michael Kopaja's show, to apply to be a part of the biennial. One of the great things is we're a granting institution. We allow others to present projects to us. So we're not fully curating the message of what this theme includes. And that allows the show to have, or the biennial to have a lot more breadth, a lot more timely content. And it is very important to us that shows discuss environmental issues, social issues, how those two intersect, as well as a variety of topics, because photography is the way that many people interact with this world. And with both of Michael Kopaja's show, as well as Free As They Want to Be, these are exhibitions that are confronting a previous narrative that have in many ways either excluded Black people, they've written narrow views of what these people's lives are, and it's asking us to confront those as we move forward in both exhibitions. And that, as far as, you know, people's visual literacy, is really important that they recognize how photography has been used to document and create the narratives of history.
We're talking about Photo Focus with artist Michael Kopaja, co-curator of Free As They Want to Be and inaugural director of the Atlanta University Center Art History and Curatorial Studies Collective, Cheryl Finley, and Photo Focus biennial director Catherine Sigworth. Dr. Finley, let's talk some more about the exhibit that you've co-curated. What, as people see this and engage with this artwork, what message do you want them to walk away with? What is the feeling that you're trying to communicate through this exhibit?
There are a couple of different messages that that we're really hoping to convey. One is looking at the innovation in the medium of photography from, you know, the early, or rather mid 19th century to the present, in that the artists that are represented in the show have works that include, you know, cased images in the case of J.P. Ball, a photographic album as well of 10 types from the 19th century. But when we look at the work of artists working in the late 20th century and today, artists like Carrie Mae Weems or Dawood Bey, Hank Willis Thomas, and many others, how these artists are using multiple media and really pressing lens-based work into different dimensions. So if we look at the work of, say, Daisha Devon Harris, she's represented by a video as well as images that are stills from a video and a series that she's been working on for some time. If we look at someone like Hank Willis Thomas, he has two works in the show. One called Exodus from the Exodusters series that is based on the first film that Gordon Parks, the noted African-American photographer, fashion and documentary photographer and filmmaker, actually, but based on his very first film, which was a biographical film called The Learning Tree. And in this work by Hank Willis Thomas, he uses lenticular photography. Again, thinking about innovations on the medium, but innovations that still address the major themes of freedom, the possibilities of freedom. What does it mean to be and to claim one's freedom, to take it, as James Baldwin would say, and also the role of memory and memory as it relates to how the historical archive comes into play. Many of the artists, as I've shared, are working with the historical archive, whether it's someone like Nona Faustine, who's represented with works that are in silkscreen as well as a photographic print from her series. One series is on monuments, the other one is called White Shoes. And in the White Shoes series, she photographs herself. These are self-portraits, but in sites of memory throughout the city of New York, wherein the history of slavery has been unacknowledged or under-acknowledged. And one of those sites, for example, is at Wall Street and a very famous crossroads in the financial district. So I think that there are many ways that we try to pull these themes together to come back to ask questions that relate to, for example, what have we learned? How far have we come if we're kind of looking at this arc of time? And also questions that relate to, again, how freedom is experienced and how freedom is experienced not only by artists who are working today, but also by the people that they've depicted. Many of the works also call to attention the notion of performance and the role or the contract between the photographer and her subject. And I think that we see that in many of the works wherein artists are actually working in self-portraiture, or in the case of, say, if we go back to someone like J.P. Ball working in the 19th century, he was a portraitist who had a studio and worked at a time when shutter speeds and, you know, the entire medium of photography was at a completely different pace than it is today. It definitely wasn't digital. It was in a larger format, and the people that he photographed often had to have their necks sort of, or their frames in a brace that would keep them still to be able to endure the long shutter speeds. And I would also want to just call out someone like Isaac Julian, whose work is really interesting because in many ways he pays homage to the medium of photography and actually, creates 21st century daguerreotypes, but 21st century daguerreotypes that tell narratives. And that's another important theme of the show, the kinds of narratives that the artists themselves tell, and also the kinds of narratives that we see in the exhibition itself, going from work of art to artist to grouping to series.
And if I can interject, Cheryl, having helped with the install with you and Deb, I think one of the things I've seen as they're putting this show together, it's an uplifting empowerment. One of the sensations I get from artists like Daisha Harris and these works, they're very empowering. It's talking about a complicated history, but these works, either Nona Faustine literally standing off and facing these historical sites that have been obscured, or Nona Faustine's work where you're seeing these feet walk across a riverbed. There's this beautiful lyrical quality throughout the exhibition that really makes it much more engaging than people might think just, you know, if they look at a website description. Mm.
Michael, that brings me back to you because your work, you talk about it as kind of confrontational. It's also very beautiful. I don't know if that's the right word to use for it, but I found it very beautiful, very engaging. And one of the things, you talked about this a little bit, but you talked to me about it as a way to purge a lifetime of this harbored, accumulated experiences. I guess I wonder, has this purge helped you in how you deal with these experiences and what you continue to experience? And how do you want this to help others, both people of color and white people who engage with your work?
Well, so that purging has made me feel like lighter, you know, emptier, healthier, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I think that, that manifested in very many ways. We talked about some of the kind of interdisciplinary offerings of the exhibit at the Freedom Center. You know, at this exhibit, even though it's everything is led by the lens, so you know, there's retro-reflective stuff, there's photographs, there's video, but there's also physical objects that make appearances, you know, in the lookbook. There's textiles, there's metals, there's bronze and silver and gold even, and there are many other objects that take shape in the form of that purge, you know. In my mind, it's what material best encapsulates this thought, this feeling, you know, this idea. And so there's a generous offering of that. In terms of how I think people feel walking into it, yesterday I had a talk and a woman was there and she said that, she said that she felt happy, even though this isn't the type of work that inspires happiness, but she said she felt happy that Black people weren't presented as the victims. Mm. You know, there's a really healthy appetite for Black trauma in our country, as particularly in the arts. And, you know, I try to work against that. So one of the avenues I take is I center whiteness, right? And I center whiteness in traumatic Black events. And I think that it does a couple of things, right? The first thing is that it kind of highlights the culture of how we interact with art. I know that in my recent past, there'll be a room full of images of Black faces, portraits, and you know, if the people aren't Black that are in the room, they don't spend very much time with them. I mean, I've sat down and 3 seconds was the fastest, right? This is a painting that might take 30 hours, that might take 300 hours. So when you center whiteness, white people tend to hang out a little bit longer and unpack what this work is really getting at the heart of. I think also because race isn't something that has significantly negatively impacted the lives of white people in the ways that it has people of color, to see themselves in a situation that they associate with an other group creates a new context and hopefully a greater sense of urgency in terms of how we need to respond to these things.
I've been talking with artist Michael Kopaj, co-curator of Free As They Want to Be and inaugural director of the Atlanta University Center Art, History, and Curatorial Studies Collective, Cheryl Finley, who also is a distinguished visiting professor of art history at Spelman College, and Photo Focus biennial director Catherine Reichman Sigworth. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find a link to the Photo Focus website on our website, wvxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Up next, we talk to students from Jordan visiting Cincinnati to learn more about American life. This is Cincinnati Edition.